are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe. It simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. I know it's the weekend. I know we live for the weekend. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, could do, will do, should do, and will do, and can, whatever. You're going to do it. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's not, I know you'll get it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And we love and appreciate you for that, that perseverance. Get it done. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for a podcast, click on that, and you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then those programs will be dated and titled. Other program that we have here at Time for an Awakening Media, my program, once again, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., all times they're going to give are Eastern times. Immediately following this program on Monday and Wednesdays, the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. Mondays and Wednesday. Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Wahad out of Philadelphia, Public Affairs Programming. After that is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it's not me, it's Sister POC and her program Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. Every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. They also have a kiosk, so you can go online and get those products, the laundry detergent, the toothpaste, toothbrushes, the razors, the batteries, all kinds of good stuff, lotions, deodorant, from WeBuyBlack.com. Or if you're in the Atlanta area, you can go to the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall where you can pick up those products as well. Once again, I mentioned something interesting about WeBuyBlack.com, so please go on. They are trying to develop a supermarket here and other locations. Here first, here in Atlanta. And they want to sell produce that is produced by us, American African farmers, and so forth. So
based upon the information I've seen and read, that they've raised about 13,000, I think, some kind of contributors. Obviously, they didn't give a lot because they only raised 400-some thousand, which is good. But they feel they need at least $1.2 million to really make that operation happen the way it should happen. So I encourage you to go online and check that out. I know as a member of a co-op, and that's, you know, what we're asking you to do. They're asking everybody to join in. It's vitally necessary for everybody to join in and do their part. Africa for the Africans. Brother Mamani Taihembe is leaving as we speak on his way to South Africa from today until December 2nd. Until December 2nd. He's going to Johannesburg and to Cape Town. Please go online and check Brother Mamani out. He has another trip upcoming at the end of next month going to Ghana. This trip costs $3,700, and the next trip will cost $3,700. That's very good. That's a good price. So check him out. The phone number to contact Brother Mamani is 404-931-9429. But if you want to see pictures, and I suggest that you should, of previous tours, the most recent one was back in May, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Also, too, Brother Rinoco Rashidi, he has a trip upcoming. Brother Rinoco, you can go to his website, Dr. Rinoco, drrunoko.com, and check out the trip he has. Also, too, the number, and Rinoco just got back in town, so you can give him a call at area code 323-803-8663. 323-803-8663. Brother Rinoco Rashidi. He is going to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau. And his trip is only $3,800. He's going to three countries. And then in addition, in Senegal, you have an opportunity to visit the radiocarbon dating laboratory established by the great scholar and historian, Pan-Africanist, Dr. Sheikhatou Diop. So it's a very exciting trip, and I suggest that you try your best to see if you can make that a reality for yourself. No doubt. No doubt. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna has a conference this weekend, starting today, a reception this evening. It's a it's the Quad Centennial African Theological Conference, Reclaiming and Amplifying the African Roots of Christianity. And that's today. There's a conference meeting restarting at reception this afternoon, 2 o'clock, and then a full workshop tomorrow. Some of the workshop titles, Greeks, Romans, and the African nation, Israel, Jesus of History versus Jesus of Faith. And there's a guest speaker, Brother Derek Rice, Pastor Derek Rice of Sankofa Church here in Atlanta. Jesus and the Dead Sea Scrolls, Black Theology and Black Women, and then his closing remarks by the Bishop, Brother Brown, here at the Shrine of Black Madonna. Also, too, I'm not sure if they're going to have their history class tomorrow at 1:30 to 3:30, of No African History Class of Know Thyself. And but if you can't attend but you like the information, you can contact the Shrine because they have a multimedia library. That's right. It is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. 7 terabytes. It's huge. And, of course, the Shrine has all kinds of good stuff when you go there. Furniture, clothing, artwork, figurines, and, of course, books. They have the red, black, and green shoes and the gas shoes. They also have Kwanzaa kits. Kwanzaa's coming up. They got candles. I was up in there. I'm quite sure you might probably need some Kwanzaa candles. Contact the Shrine. They got the red, black, and green Kwanzaa candles, too. The Meddu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Meddu Bookstore is located right near the kiosk of We Buy Black. So if you see We Buy Black, you can just turn around to your left or your right, depending upon where you're standing, and there will be the Meddu Bookstore. The Meddu Bookstore has fine books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, and stuff. And they're open during the mall time from Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9, and on Sunday from 12 to 6. And their number is 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. And then my good brother and friend, Brother Jamu, Brother Kazendia Jamu, the owner of the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. And the number to call Brother Jamu is 404-519-8107. And if he doesn't have the book that you are looking for, believe me, he'll get it for you. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Their Thursday night broadcast last night was nice, and it starts at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10. And the number to call to listen or if you want to participate is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Thursday night broadcast. Ulu. Akabin Institute. They're having Sister Ya send out a beautiful flyer of their African Warrior Women's Day. The gathering of the Asafo sisters, facilitated by Sister Ya Barudi. A discussion preparing for battle in the war zone. It's going to be Tuesday, December 10th. And you also can participate via online. You can participate via online. You can register. So contact Sister Ya, 404-753-7237. You want to probably, get in on this discussion. It is Tuesday, December 10th at 7 p.m. Akabin Institute. Also, too, we ask you to make checks and money orders out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310 to help support the school that they've had for about, 15 years now? If you don't want to send a check, but you can deal with Cash App or PayPal, go to Cash App or PayPal, put in the dollar sign, YAAM, the letter M, and then Baruti, BARUTI, and make your donation. Sister Gabrielle Arreola in Haiti. Sister Gabby, she's been sending me all kind of stuff, pictures and so forth. It's beautiful. But I would suggest that you go online to sanjay-haiti.org and see the work that she's doing, the children that are being educated, the health care program, the economic development program with chickens and vegetables and so forth. Because, in the rural areas of many of the countries, it is probably the most lack of resources and so forth. So she's doing outstanding work. So go to Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti, Haiti.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Black Talk Radio Network. The Black Talk Radio Network Media Fund, Brother Scotty Reed. I'm going to get him on the program real soon, especially for the months out, to talk about the Black Talk Radio Network Media Fund. I'm happy to be a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. I support Black Talk Radio Network. In fact, if you go online to just blacktalkradionetwork.com, if you scroll down and look to the right, there will be the donation button for the Black Talk Radio Network Media Fund, and there's also a link there as well. Please contribute so we can stay online and provide conscious-raising information that we so desperately need. Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, the Enye Sesim. November 21st. What about the good white people? Do the sins of the father transfer to the sons? Yes. The son is the father. The daughter is the mother. The children are the parents, grandparents, the very progenitors of the racial, physiological, and genetic phenotypical cultural type. Capitalist economies pursue those markets which generate the greatest profits. But these pursuits are not accidental. They inevitably follow the interests of the cultural elite, which could birth the capitalist mind. Warfare is their biggest business. Let me repeat. Warfare is their biggest business because it combines uninterrupted, unlimited profit with a sadistic need for violence towards others. Consequently, they have turned the world into a war zone. Their propaganda of peace on earth could not last because peace is not in their nature. It could never suppress their innate desire for chaos. A social system based on jealousy and domination necessarily breeds antagonism between individuals, and as populations of this mindset increase, warfare will naturally ensue. Not surprisingly, they are and will forever be who they have always been. Affirm, I know that we are who we are, and I know they are who they are. Affirm, I know that we are who we are and they are who they are. November 22nd. A man of power is hard to find. The Epic of Sun Jara. If you want to build a liberation army, who would you find? Where would you find the best, most experienced, conscious warriors? By what means would you pursue them to walk with you? How will you determine who is an enemy infiltrator? How will potential recruits be able to tell that you are not a front for enemies of Africa? A recruiter looking to identify and reveal those most prone to real revolutionary action? How would they sustain themselves and how would their methods of gaining sustenance tie them to you? How will secrecy be maintained from the inception of their recruitment? How do you assess their abilities and utility? Will they unquestionably submit to direct order or a master plan? Of course, we can always criticize this set of questions by saying this or that critical issue is not being addressed, but what are these critics doing to build actual functioning liberating armies? Not a damn thing. Affirm, I am a man, woman of power. Affirm, I am a man, a woman of power. The yin yang say sim of daily revolutionary thought. Today, Friday, the 22nd, and it was on a Friday, the 22nd in 1963. I was on the playground and somebody said, man, the president got shot. Wow. Of course, he went into the school and they talked about it was on TV and everything like that. And then on Saturday, they had Lee Harvey Oswald and they were showing him in handcuffs and being marched in. And then Jack Ruby shot him, pulled out a gun as he was walking by right there. Yeah. Some of those events like that, you know where you were when it happened, you know. And sometimes they're false flags and sometimes they're some bull. Today is Friday, and we have a guest, one of my favorite guests, and that is D-Bess. Hey, that's rhymed, didn't it? One of my favorite guests is D-Bess. Good morning, D-Bess. How are you?
Good morning, Brother Oshie. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I am doing well. I am doing well. Good to hear your voice. So what's been happening?
A whole lot of everything and a whole lot of nothing.
Exactly. That's usually what's happening. A whole lot of everything and a whole bunch of nothing at all. Yeah. But listen, I want to read what I've been reading for the last few months. Take a moment here, okay, if I can indulge. It's Kwame Nkrumah and then Marimba Ani. Because I've been reading this because we got to clearly understand what Nkrumah was about in terms of, I mean, we spouse Pan-Africanism on this program. We talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty on this program. That's what we discuss. And this is what Kwame Nkrumah said in 1961 as it related to him gaining the presidency of Ghana and espousing the philosophy of Pan-Africanism, a one African nation, the same thing Jop did, the same thing Patrice Lumumba did, and Sekou Toure, Thomas Sankara, many others, you know, and all those who espoused it, they found some Negroes or neo-colonialists to discredit them or oust them in a coup or kill them, you know.
Yeah.
And to me, that is the only solution for African people. That's the only solution for African people. So this is what Kwame Nkrumah said, the speech of freedom in 1961. I believe strongly and sincerely that we, with a deep-rooted wisdom and dignity and innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government, will emerge not just as another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, and friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. He further states some years later, if we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we have suffered heretofore. How prophetic. Look at Africa. How prophetic was this brother when he said that. Look at Africa. This is Mama Marimba. This is Mama Marimba. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior. In order to understand the effect of Europeans have had on our ability to think victoriously, we must be able to separate our thoughts from European thoughts so we can visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans. This is demanded by an African-centered worldview because we're African people. We are Africans. And because the future towards which the European leads us is genocide. Marimba Ani, I appreciate that. I've been reading those for the last few months, constantly reiterating how important it is for us to think, and more importantly, think and behave in that direction. So we're going to talk about a few people today, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. But let me start by saying I truly believe the entire attack is a mental attack.
Yes.
It is a completely mental attack.
Yes.
And once you understand that it is a mental attack, then you can move forward. Until then, you're just spinning.
Right. Well, just and then spinning. Too, you're blaming each other. You're blaming this or that. You're right. It is a mental attack. You know, in fact, as you know, I in my program with the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressor. It's the mind. And that's why this progress program is dedicated to helping to free the African mind. It is mental, you know. And in fact, if we can break that chain or release that vice grip, as I like to use that analogy, because these Europeans have put a vice grip on our minds globally. And if you know that tool, you just can't pull the vice grip apart to release it. No, you cannot. Not even a strong man. What it takes is that knob at the end of the handle of the vice grip that turns it to release the tension so you can release it. The turning of that knob is symbolic of acquiring knowledge of self. And the more knowledge you get, the more confidence you have, then bam, you break it. And then you see the European for who and what they are. You don't challenge them because you can't. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They suffer from white hegemony. They suffer from European or somebody said white fragility. They suffer from these afflictions that they're not a damn thing that we can say or do to change their mind about who and what they are. It's important for us to change ours because of what they have done to us. See, so no, you are most correct, Sister D-Bess. Yeah. So who are we going to talk about today? Oh, I know we're going to talk about Sister Aminta Ross. We're going to talk about her.
We can start out with her, and then we'll discuss some things here in Pennsylvania.
The Christiana riot.
The Christiana riot and a young man by the name of Zachariah Walker.
Yeah.
And we will also talk about the Green Book.
Okay.
The book that did allow us mobility.
Right. You know what? I'm probably going to say it again, but, you know, I thought about that years ago. I left Milwaukee and was going out to Norfolk, Virginia in a car that only had an AM radio.
Wow.
I know.
But you had a car.
But I did. I had a car. And as I'm driving through these other areas, you know, you with an AM radio, you're going to lose. And then you pick up, I tell you, country western music came in always loud and strong. You know, every now and then I get to a city, maybe in a parameter or you know, and I might pick up, you know, some good music. But, man, that was tough. So I said, you know what should happen? We should have a book or something that has the radio station. So anytime you come in a certain area, they'll tell you what kind of radio stations are, R&B or country western, jazz or whatever. And then, of course, I didn't even know about the Green Book. You know, I didn't even know about that. So let's talk about Sister Arminta Ross. Because I know the movie. Have you seen the movie?
I have seen the movie.
Okay.
I've seen the movie. I thought the movie was okay.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it pretty much looked at, I'll say, about 10 years of her life.
Okay.
And the 10 years were mostly spent, you know, coming back and forth to, or going, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm not on the Eastern Shore, but going back and forth to the Eastern Shore.
Right.
Getting her family members and friends and talking to the people of the Underground Railroad, you know,
right.
the blacks and the whites that
right.
would help you along the way. And in the movie, you know, not much about her childhood. You know, of course, we know that it was very, very difficult.
Right.
You know,
right.
to put it lightly, it was very, very difficult. But she, plain and simply, she was just a human rights advocate. You mm-hmm. know, she just said, it's just not right. It is not right mm-hmm. to hold someone against their will. And with those captives, as you say,
Thank you.
For life.
Yeah.
They were held for life.
Mm-hmm.
She did not want to leave her family, but the owners, her slave masters, but her owners, the father passed away, and when he passed away, the wife was stuck. You know, she couldn't pay the debt, so she started selling people.
Right.
And when she had no real attachment to these people, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. they're just property. They're
right,
not,
right. In fact, wasn't she, because she knew that she would be sold away from her family, they would go, you know, here or there, all of them be dispersed. She was hoping that God, she was praying, she was hoping that some divine intervention that were, she would try to keep the family together. And then when she realized that wasn't going to happen, then
right.
she prayed to God that God would take her out, you know.
Right.
And about a week or so later, that happened. You
well,
know?
she also prayed that her master would die.
Right.
And he did.
And he did.
You know, and then she kind of felt bad. She was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really, but I'm glad that he's gone.
I'm here.
It has eased up my trouble a little, but not a lot.
No.
You know, and she had to go. She had no other choice. I think, you know, what I always say is fear. You know, fear is a great motivator.
Mm-hmm.
Terror is even better. But when you're terrorized, you're going to move.
Yeah.
You will move.
Well, sometimes though, D, is that the terror could be so deep that you're catatonic and you can't move, and then suddenly you're struck, you know. But you're right. Sometimes when the fear and the terrorization is so deep that you start to plan, because you know that it's going to come down on you. So you, out of your, fight or flight. And
okay.
so she knows she couldn't fight. Cause that was death. When she's fighting with a stick and the Caucasian got a gun, you know.
Exactly.
You know, even
exactly.
if she had,
yeah.
So it's about flight, and so she took it upon herself to make that move.
Right, and she made up her mind early on that she would not fail. You know, failure is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I must be successful in doing this, because I'm sure you know, along the way, you have many opportunities to just give up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
there's many opportunities to just say, oh, well, it wasn't really that bad.
Right.
Or,
well,
know,
also, too, you're talking about miles. Even if she just left Maryland, you know, and just went just stayed up north, you know, what's after Maryland? You got Delaware.
She went into Delaware.
She went to Delaware.
She went into Delaware, and then from Delaware, she came into Pennsylvania.
Yep.
But Delaware was still, you know, slaves. But, and I'm sorry, Oshie, I'm kind of stuck on the word.
No, I know. Don't worry about it.
Work on that.
Hey, just got to work on it. Because, see, my contention is that all of us, because you hear it all the time. See?
Correct.
And just like for me, you know, you can train your mind to do what you want it to do. I don't use the word nigger, and I don't use the word bitch to describe our women or our people. So when I see that, I change that. So when I see the word slave, I say captive. When I see the word black, because we ain't black, we're African. I see the word black, I automatically say African. And of course, as we're not American, but we're African. So I use African. Africa has a noun. I use Africa as a noun. And the word I use in front of it describes the noun. So if we're here in America, we're American Africans. If we were Caribbean, Jamaican, we'd be Jamaican Africans. On the continent, we're Ghanaian Africans, Nigerian Africans. We're Africans. And believe me, Dee, if we thought in that way, that's part of that mind change that you were just talking about earlier, you know?
Yeah,
because it gives a whole different perspective. Because words give you images and conjures up images, you know. So it's just like when you see particular words, like welfare, thug, drug addict, no fit mother. Some people would hear those words and they automatically put our face on it. Slave. That's why the European consistently used that word slave, because what he wants to do is put into our minds that we ain't never been nothing but. And of course,
correct,
we know that's wrong. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Correct. But even the word black, you know, the word black has always seemed to have a negative connotation. Always, you know.
Yes.
You know, talking about a black, you know, unfortunately, you immediately, mentally, they have you thinking this has to be something negative. This cannot be something positive.
Well, you know, back at that time, and I remember Muhammad Ali talking to Caucasian on a set, talking about, you know, black was always perceived as being bad, like devil's food cake is black, angel food cake is white, everything white, right. Jesus is white, you know, and so forth. And so the word black, when we started to call ourselves black, is in a response to European calling himself white.
Yeah.
See? And so, I don't like the word black, but this is interesting. Next week, Friday, will be called Black Friday. That's recent. Now, in accounting, I imagine, as they develop accounting, the color red and the color black probably always has been used. But in the last 20 years, 15 years, they started to use the word black on Friday, because the whole idea was for you and your company or your business to get into the black before the year was out, you know, by purchasing all these goods and services during the holiday time, so you could get into the black.
Exactly.
Because they didn't.
And in that area, you would be prosperous.
Right. But see, now listen, I don't know if you, but I don't remember ever hearing the word black or Black Friday back when I was a kid or coming up either as a teenager or a young person. I just started hearing it in the last 15 or so years. In fact, earlier than that, we used to use Black Friday. We used to use Black Friday as, and I'm going to talk about that next week, but used to use the word Black Friday on Friday the 13th, because the Europeans said that's a bad luck day. That's a bad Friday the 13th. Because, you know, they were so deep in that, they used to have no 13th row on the airline and on the airplane. They used to have no 13th floor on office and hotel business, you know, pushing this black. But as we understood, as we gained knowledge, we understood that the number 13 is a good number. The number 13 is the number of transformation. But they have co-opted it. So what we used to do, we used to have a Black Friday, and we would have a potluck. Brothers and sisters would come in. Those who could sing would sing. Spoken word, poetry, whatever, you know, eating. Somebody might break a mirror. you know, or put a ladder up and walk under. Yeah, you know, I love us. I love being defiant. Black Friday. Yes.
But and that is the attempt to attack the mental attack that they just shoved on you.
Right.
You know, you're like, if they say go left, I'm going right.
That's right.
You know, if they say go right, I'm going left.
That's right.
Because of the mental attack. We would even do on the Friday the 13th business, we would call it Lucky 13.
See? Good.
So on
right
that
on.
Day,
yeah.
you would do something positive, mm-hmm. or something great would happen, or you look forward to that day. You know, so that it would be a great day. You know,
right,
it's like, oh man, Friday the 13th is going to be a lucky day. It's going to be a great day. Something great will happen today.
Yep. Right on. See? Black Friday. Yeah, like I said, I mean, you know, because there's such a negative connotation that the European had placed on that word, they wouldn't dare say black nothing back at that time. You know?
Exactly.
You know, except for
us.
And even us, because I remember when you said somebody black, they wanted to fight. I ain't black. You know, I'm colored. You know, I'm a Negro. I'm serious. Yeah, you know.
So. I do, and I mean, you know, you look back on a lot of those things, and it is, to me, it is absolutely amazing that we are not completely insane.
That's right.
Completely insane, that we have any resemblance of sanity at
mm-hmm.
all.
Yeah.
At all, because you know, you were attacked pretty much in the street. When you came home, you tried to find some peace,
mm-hmm.
you know, but you knew that, you know, the next day you would have to go out and battle again.
That's right. Every day is attack.
Know?
Every day is attack on your African. Every day, 24/7, 365. You're right.
Yes. Yes.
And don't let
every
up.
Every day, you know.
Yep.
But Harriet Tubman, you know, she has Maryland. Maryland decided that they would pump a couple $1 million into this visitor center that they have down there.
Okay.
And they actually have two buildings. They have one that's in the city of Cambridge, and that's a smaller, it's probably been there maybe 10, maybe mm-hmm. 15 years. It's much smaller. It looks as if it may have been come to be because of black people.
Mm. Okay.
So it is much smaller. It's in downtown Cambridge. But the state of Maryland, I believe in 2017, March 10th, the day that she passed away, 2017, they opened this Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Visitor Center.
Oh, okay.
And where is that at
in Maryland? Is that in Cambridge, Maryland?
It's not in Cambridge. Well, in that whole Eastern Shore
area. Okay, in Maryland, Eastern Shore. Okay.
There are a lot of little tiny towns.
Okay.
You know, you don't have any really big towns. You have a lot of little tiny towns.
Right.
And the visitor center is in this tiny town called Church Creek.
Church Creek?
Okay. Right. Church Creek, Maryland. Mm-hmm. The other museum, Harriet Tubman Museum, that's in downtown Cambridge, Maryland,
okay.
is, we'll say maybe a 15-minute drive, maybe mm-hmm. a 10-minute drive, you know. But this new one, it's just state-of-the-art. And
oh,
they
wow.
have a,
okay.
They have a byway. I think it's called a byway. But you have to drive this byway. And there are 36 different sites along that byway that you can visit. And it's listed as you're looking at the unspoiled landscapes of Harriet Tubman's escape. But of course, all they're saying is that it's rugged now, and it was unimaginable then.
Wow.
So this is not
so,
someone.
So how long is that byway? How many miles?
120.
Whew.
125.
Okay,
you know,
so there's constant markers along the way, but
correct.
As you drive, then you could see what Harriet had to endure and what the people who
exactly.
ran with her had to endure. And especially
exactly.
especially they did it at night, just like what Frederick Douglass said, and he wrote to her when they when the first person that was going to do a biography on her, which was a really messed up thing, that Caucasian lady who did that biography on her. But anyway, Frederick Douglass said, you know, I get all the accolades because I go to speaking engagements and so forth, so I do my thing in the day. But you do right. your thing at night, you know.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a lot different and a lot tougher, you know. No
exactly.
doubt.
Exactly. And just in my small travels, in the dark, it is very dark.
Yeah.
It is very, I'm sure she dealt with a new type of dark.
Yeah, D, if it's overcast or something like that, it's like closing your eyes. You know, if you don't get no reflection from the moon, you know, it's like closing your eyes. And then, of course, she had to, deal with nature in terms of feeling the undersides of the trees and moss and so forth to continue to guide her north. Because if she couldn't see the North Star, you know, or anything like that, she would have to find ways. And of course, she needed to get to a safe place before sunrise, you know.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And there's a lot of water down there, lots and lots of water. So the water can be your friend or the water can be your enemy,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're just walking along and the next thing you know.
Yeah.
You're done. But yeah. She also was able, even during her time as a slave, she was able to, for lack of a better word, get cool with the maritime people on the boats that okay. were going up and down the creek. You know, okay. so she was able to really, you know,
right.
get cool with people. And a lot of those blacks on those boats were free.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Were free, mm-hmm. but we'll just say they did not have the freedom of a white man.
Oh, no doubt.
But
oh, no doubt. I mean, it's just like in the movie. Now, I didn't see the movie, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, or as Melana Green used to say, rescue me if I'm wrong, you know, but here he was a bounty hunter. And to me, like in the movie Django, Jamie Foxx's character knew he had to have some Caucasian so he could get around. He couldn't get around independently by himself. And he sure as hell couldn't get around with a gun or a weapon, you know,
right.
because if you were trying to find somebody or you're trying to get around, period, and you got a gun or a weapon, they're going to kill you on the spot. They ain't going to ask you, well, where you going, boy? No, they're going to shoot and kill you on the spot. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, hey, don't they do it today? Hell, they shoot and kill us today without a weapon. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, you are absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you, again, even as a free black person, you know, you had very few rights and still you could be attacked
mm-hmm.
by a white man. And person never be charged,
right?
You know, because of the color of their skin.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about after talking about our mentor is the Christiana riot, because that's what that was about.
Exactly.
Fugitive Captive Act came into being that they'd go find. Caucasians go find, quote, their property and get a band of people, no matter where they were, and go get their property. And because that act said that you can come into wherever to get your property.
Yes, it did. And it also said, let me say this. We've been kind of going in circles with the Constitution and freedom and so since like the 1700s.
Okay.
So in I believe like 1788, the Constitution said that even if the slave escapes to a free state, that don't make you free. We don't care. Okay? You can go wherever you want to go, you're still a slave.
Well,
and for whatever reason, they were trying to make it sound as if you were an indentured servant, that you owed a debt that was not yet paid. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I guess with them thinking like that, you know, it allowed them to sleep.
Sure.
You know, it allowed them to sleep at night. Because otherwise, they'd have to admit that the whole idea of holding any human against their right, against their will, was not right.
Right.
It just wasn't right. So that was, I think that was in 1788. Around 1893, they made it a federal law. A federal law. It's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Stop.
Well, look at, well, look at 1857 and Dred Scott. You know, when the Caucasian, who was the doctor, and they would go in from Missouri into other parts in Illinois and so forth, these so-called free states. And so
Which were free.
And that's what he said. That's what that's what Dred Scott said. And of course, the Supreme Court, which is the prevailing mentality in the country, and you see what the Supreme Court is today. A very right-wing conservative court that's going to be that way for a few decades.
Unfortunately, you are correct.
But remember,
Brother Oshie, by the time Dred Scott came along in 1857, okay, Dred Scott comes along in 1857. Remember, 1788, they had already said, we don't care where you go.
Yeah. Yep.
We don't care where you go.
Yep.
You can go to any free state that you want to go to. We don't care.
Yeah.
You're still
property.
You're still property.
And you belong not here. It's just like what happened with Simon Northrop, 12 Years a Slave.
Yes. You know?
So even though here I am, I'm in Maryland. I'm in New York. I'm wherever. I'm so-called free. And just like he was, he's talented. He was a musician on the violin and so forth. And he's talking to these Caucasians and they drug him. And then that was in DC area, and they took him all the way down to Louisiana. But when he woke up, he was in Louisiana.
I don't think that was an anomaly. I think that was what they normally did.
I agree.
You just kidnapped people, you know, and this man, you know, North, he was born for, he was fine. He really thought he was in.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He did. He had a family. He had a nice home. He had two children, a wife. He was living, you know, living large, particularly at that time.
Right.
He had amenities.
Right. And he thought that he was far enough north that he didn't really have to worry about anything. But these people who see money over human, I guess, you know, they don't care. They just see the color of your skin. And in 1793, when they made it a federal law, okay, a federal law that the slaves be returned, okay, you cannot help them. You have to send them back.
Mm.
Okay, they said it was a federal law. You got to send them back.
Yeah.
Even with it being a federal law, people, you know, they were still, you know, the slaves were still running. They were still just running. And the people that saw them running pretty much looked the other way. They're like, nope, I don't see a thing. Y'all keep going. I don't see a thing.
Right.
I don't see a thing. But in 1850, when they did the fugitive slave law again, and they made it a federal law where the police had to help you.
Mm.
Okay.
Right. To get your property back.
It's a government thing.
Right.
Right. So not only did the government have to help you, anybody that helped you assist this slave, and anyone that helped assist the slave would be charged and or jailed. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, when I came to you saying, I need you to, when I came to the police, you know, and got my little warrant, you know, for the arrest of my people, the police have to go with me. The federal marshals have to go with me. They have no choice but to go with me. And those that do not well, you know, even now, those that don't assist the police, that's treason.
Right.
That's treason. Mm-hmm.
I tell you. So we're gonna take a break. When we come back from the break. No, this is a great discussion, y'all. Oh no, D. This is here on Time for the Awakening on the African Perspectives program here. It is your show. We appreciate you. It's your show. So we're gonna take a break, and then when we come back from the break, there'll be more of D Bess and the knowledge and the history of American Africans. We're talking about, because you know I talk about Africans. I talk about everybody, but we focus in on American Africans, and particularly brothers and sisters who did tremendous things under tremendous odds. Brothers and sisters, thank you're that. Listening. Exactly. When you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us. And of course, give us a call. I'm quite sure Sister D. Bess would like to hear from you. The number to call is 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Time to go.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Mandrell from 1972. Yeah, Mandrell. African Perspectives, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed by, on Monday and Wednesday, the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. On Tuesdays, Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9, and then Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 p.m. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesday, it is Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then Fridays at 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then Sunday at 11 a.m., it's once again Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, it's Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. on Sunday with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then every Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. Also, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness is on Blog Talk Radio on Fridays today from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern with my good brother and friend, Brother Yusuf Muhammad. And the number to call to listen or to participate is 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. Sister D, Bess.
Yes, my brother.
All right, let's get off into it again some more. But let's finish up. If you got anything else to say about Harriet? You said you saw the movie. And I know it, with movies, even though one considered them a biopic, but, you know, it's not a documentary. It's a movie.
Correct.
And so,
correct.
And because of the amount of money studios put into movies, they have artistic licensing. They want to, and they don't want to get it correct. They want everybody to come to the movie. So they can't be real, real, real bad like Caucasians really were. So they got to have some, you know, it's the same with the Black Panther movie. Got to have some Caucasians who's benevolent. Same thing they had with the Rosewood movie and any other damn movie they come out. There's got to be some, got to be some Caucasian, some benevolent Caucasian somewhere along the line, you know, so they can sell the movie. And of course,
well, Brother Oshie, I see it just a little different, you know,
sure.
Pretty much the way you're saying, but just a little different.
Sure.
Me with the fact that Harriet Tubman herself, she was like, I don't even want to see or read about slavery because it was so bad.
Yeah.
It's no one can put that type of misery on film or in a book.
Right.
That would be like to the movie and watching the rape of a 3-year-old.
Yeah. It's yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh, can't do that.
I hear
because
you.
It is bad. It is so bad.
It is so horrific. It was so horrific. It's unimaginable. You're right. And just like this past weekend, last Saturday, Baba Baruti, Marley Moon Baruti, here in Atlanta, he did his annual Kibuka, which is the remembrance and remembering the Maafa or the Holocaust through the eyes of our ancestors. So he has many of the students. He had about a good 80 or 90 this year, but they, you know, they do a little dramatization and they show how we were packed in. They show them marching in, head down, like if they were in a coffin line,
yeah.
You know, chained and so forth. And then they show them being packed in, you know, head toe or packed in like sardines. In fact, one sister said, I can't eat sardines because it reminds me of, because you know how they pack sardines
exactly.
In, you know.
Yeah.
And it's horrific. Yeah. It's unimaginable, the horrors that we had experienced. So, yeah, you're right. So.
Yeah. I mean, so I just cannot see them truly putting on film exactly what happened.
Yeah.
you know, oh my God, because we today, 2019, even when we think about it, you probably have to go 10 times worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or 20 times worse. It was just so bad. I don't believe there are words that exist.
Yeah. I remember when Roots came out. And I remember when Roots came out in the mid 70s, I was just on the fire department. And of course, the nation, because there wasn't a lot of variety or the things you could watch like today because of streaming and internet and cable TV or whatever, satellite. It was just, the commercial channels. And so everybody was watching. So we was watching it in the firehouse, you know. And I remember one Caucasian asked me, says, was it really that bad? And I didn't even know our history as deep as I know now. I said, man, it was worse. That's all I said. It was worse. Was it really that bad? You know?
Yeah. And I think that was one of the things that a lot of blacks felt, that white people, they don't really know what you're going through.
You're right.
You know, they don't really know what you're going through. And they have no idea. They're living their own little lives and they're running around. You know,
and really, nor do they really care, because once again, in order for them to do what they did, the mindset had to be, we're human, they're not, and we can subjugate to them any kind of inhumane treatment because they're not. And even in the Christianity, as they imposed it on us, it wasn't like they're trying to save our souls, because they didn't believe we had a soul. It was clearly for, you know, to retain us, to pacify us, to make us believe, you know, as they imposed that. Anything to keep us in a mindset of complicity and to be docile. But of course, we were never that. We always resisted. That's why I say all the time, we were not slaves, because a slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We never submitted. We always resisted. We always fought. We fought then, we fight today. Yep.
Correct. Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what you wanna, listen, you wanna go to the Christiana riot?
Oh, sure, sure.
Okay.
Here in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
The Fugitive Slave Law.
Right.
By the time they passed the one in 1850 that requires the government to assist you in retaining or just getting your property back.
Right.
Okay. This man in Maryland, slave owner in Maryland, he considered himself a good master.
Right. Ed, who's that? That's Ed Gorsuch?
Yes.
Yeah, Ed Gorsuch.
Okay. Okay. Call him Ed.
Okay.
Okay. He considered himself, you know, he was a good master, and he didn't say sell his slaves. You know, he set them free pretty much by the time they were 30. And he found out that four of the older guys had escaped.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland was slave. Pennsylvania
right.
was free.
Right.
That line, the Mason-Dixon line, you know, clearly separated, you know, the North from the South.
Right.
And Mason and Dixon. Mason and Dixon, these two guys, Mason was an astronomer. Dixon was a surveyor. And
okay.
They were from Britain. And they came in, I guess, just to make some money. But they did a good job. They did a good job, but that's a sidebar. But anyway, they're coming, you know, the slaves are.
Well, thank you. You know, see, that's why, D, that's why I love to have you on the program, because, see, I didn't know. I just thought they just call it that. I didn't know that those were two individuals, Mason and Dixon. I just thought there was some. So now we know. These two gentlemen are men from England. You know, one is an astronomer and one is a surveyor. They made that line of demarcation. Okay, Go ahead.
Yes, they did. And the line only goes the length of Pennsylvania. You know, some people think, well, the line goes all the way across America. No, it goes the length of Pennsylvania. After that, it just does not exist.
Right. And see, and okay. I thought, and you're right, I thought it went from the South to Mississippi, the half of the country. Because when you look at it, you know, Kentucky, enslavement, Ohio, not. Illinois, not. But Indiana, not. But, you know, those borders. And then, of course, Missouri, the Missouri Compromise, Missouri was, you know, a captive state.
Because I think what happened was when those states started coming into the Union, they were coming in like two by two.
Okay.
And so they said, okay, one has to be free, one has to be slave. Okay. One has to be free, one has to be slave. Mm-hmm. And that's how they marched their way on across.
As they went westward. Right, as they continue to go westward. Yeah, because I know Texas was, in fact, as you know, when the captivity was ending, many of the captive holders moved to Texas. And of course, they got 2.5 more damn free labor out of our people. 2.5 years. That's why I'm ambivalent about Juneteenth Day, you know? I really am ambivalent because I don't want to celebrate these Caucasians getting 2.5 more free years of labor out of our people, you know, when they finally realize.
Well, they just, like you said, they wanted to get a little more free labor, and they were just mean. I don't know any other way to put it.
Yeah.
They were just mean.
Yeah.
You know, just mean. You know, I don't know how to. I don't know any other way to put it other than they were mean.
Yeah.
You know, and even as the states were coming in, you know, one free, one slave, by the time I believe they got to Nevada. By the time they got to Nevada was gonna be slave.
Okay.
And whoever the other person was going to be free. Mm-hmm. And so the government that was in charge at the time, they were mad. So they were like, okay, we're going to take your water. And that southern tip, that crazy southern tip of Nevada.
Yeah, that points into Arizona and New Mexico. Right.
Correct. Right in there. Where I think it must have been Arizona then. So they took Arizona by going deeper into that land.
Okay.
Because they were angry with them being slaves, and Nevada was free. Okay, Nevada was free, and Arizona was slaves and were angry. So they're like, okay, we'll go in, and if you even do any history on Nevada, right down in that area, there they have a water.
I'm sorry, you broke up on me, D. You said what?
Right down in that area, they have a lot of the water. I don't know what's my, is it my connection, Brother Ocean?
I don't know. You sound great right now, so keep that up.
You sure?
Yeah, and I apologize. That southern tip really is California and Arizona, not New Mexico. I apologize about that. But go ahead. You sound great.
Well, the area I'm speaking of is Nevada and Arizona.
Okay.
Okay, because New Mexico is much too far, too far east, you know. So it's Nevada and Arizona. That's where the issues were. But let's get back to the Christiana riot. Ed, he goes in search of his slaves, and he realizes that since this law has been passed, he can get a warrant. He can go down, get this warrant, and present it to these people, and they have to give him his.
They have to give him up, huh?
They have to give him up.
Mm-hmm.
So when he comes to Philadelphia, he gets the paperwork that's needed. He hires police to go with him. And he takes the federal marshal with him. He heads back down there, and sympathizers see them. Mm-hmm. When the sympathizers see them, now they go, oh, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. This is not going to be easy. We can't do a sneak attack on these people. Okay. The police officers, they're like, okay, we're done. We're going back. We're going back to Philly. Mm-hmm. But the federal marshal, he goes down there with them. And they go to the house. It was the house of this man named Parker, William Parker.
Okay.
Him and his wife, they had been on this Quaker land. They had come across the slaves themselves, but they wanted to stay in the area and help others that would come through. And since they were so close to the Maryland state line and the slave catchers were just constantly coming over, just snatching people,
them. Yeah.
And taking them back. They had put together a plan where if anything goes down, we're going to fight. We're going to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And you go out to the wife. The wife would go out, blow a horn, and that horn would say, okay, we have to fight.
Okay.
So that was,
so when they blew that horn, that made everybody understand, get your weapons. It's about to go down. Okay.
Exactly. Whatever your weapon. It can be a stick. It can be a broom. Yeah. It can be a pot.
Yep.
Whatever you can fight with. You come down and you help fight.
Mm-hmm.
When the melee begins, white people come down to help too. But mm-hmm. Ed and the marshal, they think they're coming to help them. And they're like, no, we're not here to help y'all. We're here to help the people that are trying to escape. And they stuck Ed maiming quite a few of the people that are with him. And eventually, you know, they separate. Ed's group goes back to Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And slaves, they leave because you cannot stay here anymore. They leave. They move on to Canada. But don't you know, within a month, the Marines go down there.
Mm.
They're arresting people and charging them with treason because you have to help a federal person when they're trying to fulfill their federal duties, their government.
Okay. Right. I see.
They go down, they arrest all these people, they take them to court, and what ended up happening was the federal marshal, he had to finally admit, well, you know, I don't know who started it because I was hiding in the cornfield. Okay. They had to let everyone go.
Yeah.
Parker and his wife, by the time the Marines came down there looking for people, they were long gone. They were long gone, and they made their way to Canada, and with the help of Frederick Douglass.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
Yep. With the help of Frederick Douglass, and he goes on to Canada. And in Canada, he, I believe he became a writer for Douglass's magazine, the North Star.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think he wrote articles for that magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I think what you pretty much have to understand is that you can, as they say, fight the law. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can fight. You know, especially if it's something that's immoral. You know, you can completely ignore that law,
right?
Because it is immoral,
right.
And that was certainly immoral to end someone's freedom. You know, when all they want is their freedom.
Yeah, and what was interesting to me is that your friend Ed, his son Tom. And he had a classmate, and they swore revenge on his father's death. His classmate was John Wilkes Booth. Yeah, and I reached out like, really? Yeah, his classmate was John Wilkes Booth, and they had sworn revenge on the death of his father because his father was in that shootout in
And we know how that went, right?
Exactly, we sure do. We know how that went.
We know exactly what happened to Boo.
Yep.
You know, we know that he was a little insane himself.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So we know what happened to him, and they often would get really hyped up about, you know, seeking revenge or going after people,
mm-hmm.
or killing people, and they would be like a pot, and it would boil up. And then if you waited them out, it would just go back down and simmer.
Mm-hmm.
And you never hear another thing about it. And they never were able to revenge the man's death.
Right.
You know, and again, you know, the slaves went north and the slave owners,
yeah,
and catchers, they went
south.
Back to the south.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the federal marshal, you know, they found that he was just a very, very racist person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very racist person, and a slave catcher himself.
Right.
And a liar. I mean, they just had,
right,
a whole.
Well, I mean, you know, if there's money involved, it's just like in the fictional character in the movie, in the Harriet movie. You know, it's just. Now, like I said, I didn't see it. So was this brother moving around independently, or did he have, was he moving around with some Caucasian who could have vouched for him, you know, or has he, like, he was that person's servant or you know?
Well, there were actually two. Okay, there was a younger slave catcher, and there was an older slave catcher. Older meaning, I'll say 40, 50 years.
Oh, wow. Okay,
years
now, old. Now were they... Were they us, or were they Caucasian?
They were us.
Oh, wow.
There were two of them. There were two of them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
There were two of them. And in the movie, what ends up happening is the younger one, I mean, you know, I don't really want to say snitches, but
mm-hmm.
they were snitches.
Yeah.
And the younger one trying to get information on Harriet saw her out in the woods, and she got to a position where she had to cross some water, and she crossed the water and did not drown.
Okay.
So I guess he thought, oh my gosh, she can walk on water, so I need to get with this lady.
So
we need to be cool.
So I'm quite sure he was very upset. Dee, before we go off into the Coatesville, we got a caller. Let's take this call. 646-646, good afternoon.
Hey, what's happening, Oshie? Good afternoon to your guest.
Hey, Jay.
How you doing, sis? Right quick, in regards to the Harriet Tubman movie, how much of it you think was accurate about what was going on during those great missions that she did?
I would say 80%. But like Oshie says, Hollywood often uses artistic license to either make things a lot bigger than they were or a lot smaller than they were. You know, so I would say about 80%. But for us as Blacks, we need to do our own digging. We need to look for ourselves. You know, we cannot look to someone else to educate us, whether it's a movie, a TV show, whatever. We have to educate ourselves.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. I'm just not one for going back in regards to certain historical things. Like this whole thing with, you know, Harriet Tubman. I mean, I think it's valuable information. I think we need to have an understanding of it. But I just think there's more things that need to be exposed to our children in regards to the psychological damage that we've suffered from at the hands of this devil. Because it's affecting us today. Because for some reason, we as a people just can't get in our heads that we need to be figuring ways how to come together and get away from this bastard. You know what
but
I mean?
Don't you think that's what she was doing? She gave you a great example of not being able to accept what was happening and knowing that this is wrong?
Yeah, in a sense, I think so also. But let's not forget, she was still aligning herself with these so-called devils that were supposedly assisting us in our freedom. Just like you have these so-good white folks today who are supposed to be our allies, but in all truthfulness, all they really do is use you for your talents and how they could benefit from your talents. My whole thing is that we have to get to the point to where as we really have to separate ourselves psychologically from this white man totally and figure out how we're going to come together and move forward as a people and build something for ourselves. This is why we're so caught up into this madness with elections and things of that nature, because it doesn't really benefit black folks. What it really does is it allows white folks to stay in power with our assistance. It's just like once you get to a certain point in a child's psyche, if you don't educate him to be independent, he'll never want to be independent for himself. He'll always want to go to the daddy for a job or something to the daddy for. You know what I mean? You have to, from the cradle to the grave, make a child understand you don't want to work for the white man, never. You want to be able to get whatever skills you can to be independent. That's why, if you notice, they took certain things out of the schools when the schools were much better. That's why today I never understand how a parent would allow their child to go to a public school and not homeschool them. Because they're not preparing you but to do anything but be subservient to them in a whole different manner. Remember, when I went to school, you was able to learn trades. You was able to learn how to think. You were able to do things that they don't even teach today. You know what I mean? So everything in regards to where we are going, we are being brainwashed into thinking that the white man's ice is colder than our own ice. Because he can't have us, what, independent of him? He can't have us looking for sovereignty. He can't have us in a position to where as we're not dependent on him. I mean, think about the little things that he does, like making it damn near illegal to grow your own food. You think about that.
Yeah.
You know, how do you make it illegal to be able to grow your own food?
Or Jay, if you go off the grid and collect water or electricity, yeah, and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we don't even think of those things as a mm-hmm. people, because we're so embedded in trying to have what he has and be a part of what he has to never think about, let's say, setting up our own thing, to yeah. develop our own thing. Yeah. You know, that's why I always laugh when I hear, you know, Abu Muhammad talk about separation or else. Because my whole position is this. You supposedly have a nation. The nation is Islam. Why don't you go about your business and do it yourself? There's many places you can go set up shop at.
Well, you know, that's
you
interesting.
Can't really do it.
That's interesting. There are a couple entities that do have some farmland. I know the Shrine of the Black Madonna, you know, with the three, Houston, Detroit, and Atlanta, and they have some farmland, I think, where is that farmland? I thought it was in Arkansas, not Arkansas, but anyway, I'll find that out. But anyway, and also, too, the nation. And at one time, the Nation of Islam, at the waning years of Elijah Muhammad, of the late 60s and into the 70s, they had farmland, they had businesses, there's grocery stores, restaurants, yeah. the whiting fish, all that. But now today, even in Chicago, the salon restaurant is hardly open. You know, they don't have the bakery no more.
How do you call yourself a nation and you can't even keep your own restaurant open by just doing one thing? Demanding that all your members eat in there.
Yeah.
Until it gets to the point to where it doesn't take that self sufficiousness from your members to be able to make it do what it do. I remember growing up, they had, like you say, the fish. They had the steak and tape.
Yeah.
They had other businesses. Now they don't have no businesses. What do most of their members do? They work for the daddy.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to be an independent nation. How could you be an independent nation working for the daddy?
Yeah.
You go into the daddy in a different uniform and they know
I'm gonna get our guests back in because we got a couple other things we're gonna talk about. We're gonna talk about the Coatesville, and we're gonna talk about the Green Book. Okay, Jay, keep listening, man.
All right, Hotel.
So, I know that there was a number of people who were put on trial, and I'm not sure what the outcome over 40 some people put on trial. I don't know what the outcome of those proceedings were.
They were found not guilty.
Okay.
They were found not guilty because the attempt was to charge them with treason. And the first person that they attempted to try was a white guy. And he was just a little old farmer. And the lawyers for the defense were saying, how in the world is this one little man going to go up against the United States? That doesn't even make any sense. And so with that, they had to free him, and then they freed all the others. I think it was about 30 or 40.
It was about 40.
Okay. And, you know, blacks and whites.
Right.
You know, because there were white people that were, you know, sympathizers or just did not believe in slavery. And certainly in that area.
Right, because that's right. It's Philadelphia. Well, Pennsylvania. Some of them could have been Quakers. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you had many, many Quakers, even though, you know, at one point Quakers did own slaves, but their thinking was, okay, we'll own you for a little bit and then we'll set you free. But after a while, they just stopped owning them altogether because they knew or they saw that this just is not right. It just is not right.
Right.
You know, that's simple. It just is not right. You cannot hold another human being. You know, you just can't.
Then now we have the Coatesville situation with Zachariah Walker. He was a brother who went north, left his wife and family, and went to Coatesville, Pennsylvania. And he was a steel worker. He was a steel worker. And has information I read that he was probably a Friday night. He got blasted and feeling all good. And so.
let me start by saying.
Okay.
It wasn't until 2018 that the Senate would pass a national anti-lynching legislation.
Mm-hmm.
2018. Okay, but as of today, it hasn't passed through the House, and the president hasn't signed it either.
Mm.
Okay, so 2018. So right now, it's still quasi legal to lynch a person, to lynch a black man.
Mm.
Okay, but it has not been passed. But I'm sorry, but back in 1923, Pennsylvania made it illegal, okay? So it's illegal in Pennsylvania. It's not illegal nationally, all right?
Okay.
So Zach Walker, he lived in Virginia, came to Coatesville. Coatesville was a steel town at that time, and they would take anybody. They wanted people.
Right, they needed people to work, right? They just needed people to work. In the steel mills.
To work in those steel companies. There are two companies. They wanted people to work. Zechariah was about 20 or in his 20s. We'll say he was in his 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to this area along with people from America and from outside of America. So you had all sorts of immigrants coming in there.
Okay.
Even with them coming in there, they already had a black neighborhood and a white neighborhood. And people already knew, you know, you kind of sort of knew your roles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the black people, you stay over here. The white people, you stay over here.
Right.
And the immigrants, you can't even stay in town. You have to be out someplace else. So he wasn't even living in the town. He's out someplace else. And it was a Saturday. He decides to go. He gets off work, goes to the bar, has some drinks, leaves the bar, heading home. He runs into these two white guys. And I guess he, for whatever reason, he decides he's going to scare these guys. And he pulls out his gun and shoots over their heads. He scares them. They run. When they run, the security guard from the steel mill that Zechariah works at comes out and, you know, kind of accosts him and says, you know, well, you know, what are you doing? You know, you need to go with me. And he's like, no, no, no. And he even admitted later on that he got smart with this man,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, and you know, of course, you know, you can't get smart with white people, but he got smart with this man. And he said the man threatened to beat him up. He and the man both pulled out the guns. He was a better shot. He killed the man. And with him shooting, well, he didn't die immediately, but with him shooting the man, he knew this is not good. Now, I have to,
yeah.
This it's just not good. I have to leave. I have to run. So he runs off into the woods. The two people who he had shot the bullets over their heads, they said, oh, we know who that was. Mm. It was, you know, the man that shot it up. He mm-hmm. shot this security guard. Now, they're really, really angry, and the mobs go out searching for him. And they're searching, searching, searching. They can't find him. This is Saturday night. They can't find him. It's raining. It's dark. They're like, okay, we'll just go home. The police will find him. The next day, they still hadn't found him. But as the day goes on, they end up finding him in a tree. So he's up in this tree, and, you know, the mob is down at the bottom of the tree. He decides, well, you know what? I'm going to kill myself because I know what y'all going to do. And he shoots himself, trying to shoot himself in the head, and didn't really shoot himself in the head. He shot himself in the jaw.
Oh,
fell
man.
Fell out of the tree. I know.
Fell out the tree. Damn. Oh.
I know. He just maimed himself. He didn't kill himself. And falls out of the tree. They take him to jail. The mob is outside of the jailhouse. The chief of police, he comes out and he says, well, you know, he killed himself. He's dead. Thinking this will make them leave. No, that didn't work. They didn't leave. So he goes back in and he starts talking to Zechariah, and Zechariah says, yeah, I killed him. It was in self-defense. I shot him, but it was in self-defense. We both had guns. I was a better shot. Now the cop, the police chief, he's pissed. He goes out and he tells the mob that he has admitted to killing this man, but he didn't tell them anything about the that he said it was in self-defense. He didn't say anything about that. So now they're really, really upset. They're like, okay, we're gonna, you know, have some vigilante justice. Well, since he was so maimed with this gunshot wound, they took him to Coatesville Hospital. Took him to the hospital, the police took him to the hospital, chained him to the bed. You know, I think they even put a straitjacket on him. But he could not move.
Okay.
And they had one cop in there to watch him. Chief, he leaves, and I think the police force, they might have had like 5 or 6 people. It wasn't a lot of people on the force. But he goes out and he tells the crowd, he says, well, you know, he's in there and he's not really being watched. you know, won't be hard to get him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It won't be that difficult. You know, I'll just look over here and you guys do whatever you got to do. And they went in and drug him out. They could not find the keys to the handcuffs, so they took the footboard, I think, of the bed and dragged him out, took him to a farm to set him on fire. And the farmer, he comes out and he says, oh, no, can't do that here. Go across the street. You can do it over there. And they took him over there, and he kept saying, you know, I did it in self-defense. You guys, why are you doing this to me? But they were very, very careful not to beat him into unconsciousness because they wanted him to know.
Right,
exactly
he wanted to feel that. They wanted him to experience that horror of being burned alive. Yeah.
Sadistic. Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, usually when you lynch someone, you kind of sort of, well, I don't know if I want to say usually, but lynchings are usually hangings, not this one. Mm-hmm. They set him up.
Right.
And he kept crawling out, and they pushed him back in. They crawled out, and they pushed him back in. I think he came out maybe three times, and then they had some ropes that they put around his neck, pulled him back in, and he never came out again. And then the crowd, they were so, I guess, polite that the men would step aside so that the women and children could have a good view.
Yeah.
You know, then they waited ever so patiently for all the cinders to cool, and then they just started taking souvenirs. You know, they took the blades, they took his bones, they were
yeah. There have been the good work that sister. And, you know, that she did with the anti-lynching, you know, Ida B. Wells, whom I love,
Ida B. Wells. Yeah.
You know, the work that she did and many others. And then, of course, a book came out, Ginsburg, 100 Years of Lynching, documenting the numbers of lynchings that have taken place. And, of course, those events were public events. They were announced public events. In fact, some allege that the word picnic comes out of that pick a nigger, you know. And so they would have a socially, it became a social event, you know, seeing our men and women and children. I mean, let's be real, all of that. So, but
And she would even, I believe it was Ida B. Wells, one of them said, you know, that blacks were lynched for everything and for nothing.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Across America.
Almost in every state. I remember a couple lynchings happened in Wisconsin, you know, Illinois, everywhere, you know. And, of course, it started to wane down in the 40s and 50s and into the 60s, but all the way up until that brother named McDonald was lynched in Alabama. And the Southern Poverty Law, right, Southern Poverty Law Center found the Klan group that did it and his mother got their property, you know. But you know,
keep in mind, these are documented.
Yes, that's a very good point because a lot of them weren't.
Correct. Mm. And there is a lynching museum in Alabama, Montgomery.
Right, I've been there. The Justice Initiative. There's the Justice Initiative in Alabama. What they have is a memorial. And how it is constructed, did you see these big metal things hanging. And they also have a museum in it's in Montgomery, Alabama. And the metal things, they have writing on them of the days and the people who were hung. As I was walking through there, I noticed that on March 17th, in South Carolina, in the 1880s, something to that effect, there were five people lynched, no names. Now, of course, March 17th is St. Patrick's Day. You follow me? So when I looked at that, I'm thinking, you know, these Caucasians got drunk and it just went out and just lynched people. It was just like, so it's just like, here I send my son down the street to the auntie house. I just made some bars of soap and she got some greens. So I'm sending him down there with that soap that she wants. I want these greens for the weekend. Now he's gone too long. Now he's missing. Why? Because he encountered some Caucasians and they just lynched him just for the damn hell of it. Man, I know.
Yeah. Well, and Zachariah Walker, at that museum, they have the soil. They go out to the spaces. Right. His soil is one of the 800 or more that are at that museum in a jar.
Right. Yeah.
You know, his soil is there. And also keep in mind that as of today, the anti-lynching law has not passed. As of today, it has not passed through the House, nor has the president signed it.
Mm. Well,
this is 2019.
We don't have but a few more minutes. Let us get to, unless you want to wait to get to Don Shirley when we have you on again.
We can do it another time. We can do it another time.
Okay. We'll talk about the Green Book. So we're gonna save that. Yeah.
Okay. And what I want to add to that is my conversation about the Green Book would have very little to do with not Don Shirley. Even though we can talk about him, mm-hmm. but it would have very little to do with Don Shirley.
Oh, okay.
It would have more to do with the mobility that as a black person,
mm-hmm.
the mobility
right.
that you must have in order to grow.
Okay. Yeah.
You must be mobile. You can, and anyone that tries to stunt your mobility, they are stunting your growth.
I agree. I say. So, but getting back to what happened, in, you know, like I said, I visited the Justice Initiatives Memorial and Museum, and it's very moving, you know. And in fact, it is already stated that this is really a portion of the people who were lynched. Because just like you said, correct. Many people, some don't have that documentation. Some where they may not have the multitudes. There's a brother who could have been lynched. He passed. He developed
the one in Milwaukee?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So exactly. I'm a Tom Patera.
Yep. You had his book. I used to help promote his book. Yeah. Good man.
A great man.
Yeah.
Because he said when he was a teen. And he and some friends, and he and two friends were being lynched, and they ended up lynching
right.
the two friends.
Right.
A voice in the crowd or something said it wasn't him.
That's right.
And they let him go.
Yeah.
And the other two were lynched. I cannot think of his name, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
I should know because I've known him a long time, and right now at this very moment, since you said that, his name was right on the tip of my tongue. I'm going to get it in a second here.
Museum. I mean, it was open for a moment, and from what I understand, it's not open as we speak. What's up
well,
with those?
Okay, well, what's happening with that is that it did close. It's been renovated, and it's about to open. It was on a virtual piece for for a minute. It was on virtual. And I remember he was always trying to get that museum. He was inspired by the European Jews who had developed the Holocaust Museum in Israel through the efforts of the United States government. In fact, they have a Holocaust museum in D.C., you know. And so he started in a number of locations before he got the location where the museum is presently held, you know.
Yeah, his name is James Cameron.
Yep.
I had to let my mind go blank.
Yeah.
And then I remembered.
Exactly. Because I'm saying to myself, why can't I think? I mean, I've known him since the early 70s, you know.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful man. And Dr. James.
I think I met him once.
Okay.
I met him and like you said, a beautiful man.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And so when his book came out, he was also on 60 Minutes, you know, telling his story about how he was in Marion, Indiana, and his three buddies, him and two other guys, and they were robbing this couple who were in a car, and they wound up killing them, and the mob went to their houses. One of my good brothers here. Yep, thank you, Brother Kwaku, because he knows I go through these states of some timers. I have some timers. But anyway, he said that, you know, they had killed them. And there's a very famous one of those other ugly pictures of us being strung up. And that's the one where the Caucasian is pointing to the two brothers. That's that picture. That's that. And the Caucasian girl, and they're smiling and so forth. And so he was in prison, and then they broke him out. And they were going through the crowd. And just like you said, he said miraculously, a voice was saying, don't. He didn't do anything.
He didn't do it.
Yeah.
And they had the rope around his neck.
Yes.
Because he lived with those rope burns.
Yeah.
You know, he lived with those rope burns for the rest of his life. And he was a teen when that happened.
Yep. Marion, Indiana. So, I mean, it doesn't make any difference. You know, you don't have to be south of the Mason-Dixon line.
No.
You know.
Correct.
It can happen in any place, you know. Yes. So these are, you know.
I think that was one of the things that appalled the state of Pennsylvania about the burning of Zachariah Walker.
Yeah.
Because they were like, look, this is the North. We don't do that kind of thing up here.
In fact,
The state even tried to remove Coatesville's charter. And again, the pot boiled heavy, and then it simmered down, and they were like, oh, well, don't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah. They were upset. I mean, it really, really made the state look bad, the world.
As well as they should. But like I said, you know, the lynchings, they happen around the country, obviously predominantly in the South, in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, you know, predominantly, you know, in those three states, Texas, you know. But that's the reality. That's the terror that we had to experience. That's why when a lot of our people don't understand why reparations is so important to us, not that we get a check or something like that, but we have been severely damaged. And reparations is about our repair. As a people, that's why I really never advocated reparations for an individual to just get some money. You know, I've advocated reparations to us build institutions to repair us, to educate ourselves, to make us have the ability to do for ourselves. So, but anyway, I got to go. That time is up, dear. D-Best, I appreciate you. I look forward to the next time. I'll be talking with you real soon.
Take care, Ocean. Always a pleasure.
Always. We end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and glorious weekend, a safe weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodia. Bibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahodia, family, have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Peace.